Answer: yes, most assuredly, and they have been so used in all of what you call time, ever since matter on your plane or consciousness came into being. Question: this implies an acceleration of the vibratory rates of molecules and atoms. How is this increase in vibratory rates affected? Perhaps I can put it into words that will be understandable. I do not know. Not that you would not understand, but I am, as you are aware, working with a physical brain that knows nothing of such things, but I shall try. To begin, the radiation out of which these things are built is brought about by mind activity. It is based on the same order as what is called in the spiritualistic world teleportation. Teleportation always brings about either extreme heat or cold. In bringing these manifestations into your world, heat is first used. After the body becomes dense to your density, what you call density, it starts throwing off heat radiations, heat energy at a terrific rate of speed. This heat strikes at the hydrogen and oxygen atoms around the object, creating what may be called a form of combustion. This combustion brings down the temperature of the object even as it is climbing again. This creates a magnetic field around the object, attraction for it, a road for it. Question: it seems possible that if part of an object is suddenly raised to a very high temperature, there would be a thrust or back kick against the unheated part. Our associate, John Hilliard, calculates that a steel bar 1 foot long, an eighth inch in diameter, heated to 1000 degrees 3 million times a second, if the stretch could be made unidirectional, would take off at about 1200 miles an hour. But I take it that is not what you are talking about. You are speaking of an external thrust, are you not? External in a way, because the heated object acts as both a magnet and a repeller. Sir, it is extremely difficult for me to put it into words. Question: is there a heat wave which passes over the exterior of the disc? Yes, over the entire surface of the disc is this heat wave. I wonder if any of you have noticed the intense glow around these objects? Some of them reach what you call white heat. Now, this is heated and cooled at an extremely high rate of speed. We will need the quantum theory to explain this. Question: this heat wave does not affect the interior of the discs and the people in them. Answer: no, it does not. Question: is it a pick, up, and lay down motion, like that of a caterpillar or inkworm? Answer: yes, the expansion and contraction at quantum rates. Question: let me quote a little more of what Associate Hilliard says. It's a pick, up and lay down process in which the whole substance of the driving mechanism literally flows forward. I imagine the material of which the driving unit is comprised, it may be a bar or the skin of the ship, has a peculiar property which could be called localized heat transfer. If it is heated and cooled rapidly on one end, the hot and cold spots will travel along the bar. The process is not so much molecular as it is a space-time process. Heat, light, etc., are waves or vibrations in the absolute ether, so to speak. That is infinite, so there is nowhere in it. In effect, the waves in the bar stand still. The illusory shape or etheric substance flows along them by the process, in a molecular sense. And the luminous effect is the radiant discharge at the end, where the shape slips off the wave form. Rana, ka, lo, good. That is excellent. I am fascinated by the explanation. I cannot do well with this boy's brain, because he knows nothing at all of such things. Question: could we use such a method of propulsion? I think so, but in the present state of the world the cost would be far too great, far beyond the profits gained to produce that kind of heat and to be able to have the kind of material that would stand up under such heat. It would have to be an exceedingly tenuous material, and I do not know of any such in the world today. Yes, it would be a synthetic material. Question: what would be the most profitable line of inquiry for our physicists to pursue in this connection? The effort to understand what the etheric is, apart from what are called gases. That would be the first approach, to be able to understand this unseen space around you. Also to be able to understand what is called molecular motion. I do not think that even your most advanced scientists today understand molecular motion. Question. Do you find molecular motion in the ether? Answer. Yes, it applies to etheric motion. You cannot go anywhere without finding molecular motion. Question. Is all substance on your plane particulate? Answer. Yes, I know of no such thing as a homogeneous medium on any plane. Recent communications. The voice of the Yarda. You have asked me this question. Since the crossing of space, of distances measured in terms of light years, is impracticable even at the speed of light, yet the craters or disks are said to come, or some of them are, even from beyond the galaxies. What expression can be used to indicate this crossing? I reply, that the only word I can suggest is emergence. It is used by you in philosophy, and I think in your science also. Consider this set of ivory balls, one within another, 10 in all. Each is free to move within another and outside of another. Let us say there is no space at all between them, and indeed there is no such thing as unoccupied space. Now, on each ball there are corresponding points. Any point, that is, any place, space, time place on, say, the outside ball, shall we call it your Earth, world, has a point corresponding to it on its inside, and also on the outside of the second ball, and so on through all the concentric or nested balls. Now, that which is on the surface of any one ball may emerge on any of the others, without being hindered by any crossing of space. If there is no crossing of space, then the factor of time has no meaning. This illustration, like all others, is of course inadequate, yet it may be helpful. The materialization of entities in your world is of the nature of an emergence. As will be noted later, emergence may also be described as a underscore conversion of energy or a change of vibratory rates. 40 in falls are to be accounted for in similar manner. If the vibratory rate of etheric matter is slowed down, it becomes visible and tangible. This would be materialization from our point of view, but a dematerialization from the etheric viewpoint. You also asked, what does the visitation of the disks portend? I would say it portends in greatest part the expansion of your sun into a supernova. The under strata of the Earth are getting hotter, due to an increasing cosmic radiation. More and more of this is passing through the ionosphere. It affects a mutation in the chemistry of the Earth and a kind of crystallization of the surface. Huge hollows are formed and the brittle outer crust collapses into them. These physical effects and chemical alterations are being studied by the space people, and for this reason they are often seen gathering samples of soil and water. A question to the control: is the future of our planet really known on your plane of existence? Answer: yes. Question. An eminent occultist has recently said that an incredible interplanetary debacle is in the making. Answer: yes, I would go along with that. Question. Would you say that this event is still remote? Answer: some things we are not allowed to say, and you know that this is one of them. Please excuse me from answering those who object that the foregoing dislocates both the scientific and occult time schemes of evolutionary processes fail to allow for the acceleration, which is not a constant and is unpredictable. The Yarda, all this Earth talk about the disks. The mere existence of these objects is nothing new or remarkable. Man has been flying for many centuries in one way or another. But Earth people cannot be given the secret of building these objects right away, because if it fell into the hands of any one government it would make war inevitable, though it is, anyway. Yes, the Canadian scientists know a way of operating a disc-shaped craft, but not as it is done by the space people. There is almost no comparison. The substances in the space disc are not the same as the groupings you have on your Earth. The molecular structure is entirely different. The electronic fields are different. The linking together of molecules in the disc material is of such tensile strength that no force known to you can break them apart or cause a cut or break in the substance. The particles that make up the ethers can be thought of as sub-atomic matter, And as we sub one lower than that, we go out of existence so far as the world of measurable matter is concerned. The ether is one there one whether for a purpose or not. There is no such thing as nothingness. It is a word, a sound, not even an idea. Truthfully, the atom has never been smashed, only a piece of it has been blown away, or thrown away, which is the outer shell, or one of the outer shells. Should you ever truly break up the atom, you would not only turn it off into another, but you would turn your whole solar system into a super solar. The whole system would become nothing but light radiation, millions of times brighter than your sun. Concerning the beings who operate some of the aeriforms, they are not as horrible in their nature as the appearance of some of them might lead you to believe. It is true that many of them are not of man form, and being of a much higher mentation, they do not possess your emotional responses. They are no more likely to react to your ideas of good and evil than you would to the ideas of an ant or a cockroach. Nevertheless, these beings have no evil intent, for if so, they could have taken over or destroyed the earth eons ago. At this writing, December 7, 1953, some disquiet has been caused by statements purporting to come from the space people themselves, concerning their so-called horrible appearance. It is also said that the space craft now overhead are literally numbered in the millions, and that some kind of action of a regulatory nature is to be expected from them. This is derived from alleged communications from the aeriforms, which nevertheless can be accepted as valid. By the time this is published, many such questions may be cleared up. It is true that the Aetherians have in the past taken large groups as well as single individuals from the Earth and placed them on other bodies in space, both in and outside of your solar system, and it is likely they will continue to do this from time to time. They have also on occasion used human beings for experimental purposes, much as your men of science do with animals. In any case, you have no grounds for moral reproaches against the Aetherian peoples. The numerous alleged cases of persons, animals and objects being taken, visibly and otherwise, now begin to appear halfway intelligible, though of course not to textbook science. Teleportation in its narrower sense, as well as the dissolution of object in atomic whirls or warps, will have to be reckoned with by the science of the near future. As to the question, why do space beings need to use the disc craft and other forms? If they are dwellers in space, why can they not move about without a machine of any kind? This is best answered by another question. Man himself is a space being, why does he find it necessary to create a form to move about in? Men and Aetherians alike are purely mental beings and are everywhere in consciousness, which is space, but the phenomena of life require form building. All forms are made up of varying degrees of universal life energy and are manifestations of it. When the Aetherians desire you to know of their presence, they must create form, so that you can become aware of them through the measuring rods, called the senses of the body. Earthman need have no fear of these beings, unless he attacks them or becomes too inquisitive, in which case it is likely they will retaliate in like manner. What do the discs portend? By Yad Adishiite. 1953. It is about 2.25 billion years since man made his first attempt to live on the Earth, and about 7 billion years since the formation of the primeval vortex from which the Earth arose. Throughout all this enormous period of time, by your measurements, the people of the discs, in their craft which we call Caritas, have been making periodic visits to the Earth and studying its nature and action. All races of men have seen them. 500,000 years ago they were well known to the dwellers in you, the civilization of the Himalayas. What does their present coming portend? The universe, the whole cosmos is expanding. It is like an explosion of the cosmos. You know that there are dwarf stars, and also that there are supernovas. Now, these pass one into the other, each can become the other. This is also true of the island universes, which can and do change back and forth. This is the play of atomic energy, of magnetism, of attraction and repulsion. All the stars, the suns, are in effect huge dynamos. These discs you are asking about, They do not belong to the world of three-dimensional matter. They come out of other and far greater densities. They come out of worlds of substance 100,000 times more dense than the matter which you perceive by your senses. The Rolf Tellano Communications, dictated to BSR Associate, RT, The Flying Saucers. By Rolf Tellano. 1. There are very ancient laws which declare all intelligent entities, on every planet and plane, and of whatever form, to be brothers, and to make each responsible for his brother's welfare. Under this law, the higher races assume the obligation of aiding the material, mental, moral, and scientific development of all lesser races with whom they come in contact. The Adamic races of this planet have been under observation by, and have been receiving aid from, various of these higher races ever since their beginnings. Some members of their guardian races have been incarnated among them. Others have come here from other places, using for transport various craft which are now popularly, but incorrectly, grouped under the designation of flying saucers. 2. Just prior to World War II, it was noted that certain sinister forces were gaining considerable influence, and were likely to create a very dangerous unbalance between scientific and ethical progress. Scientific knowledge with a high potential of harm was being revealed and pushed rapidly forward before moral development had advanced to a point where such knowledge could be popularly employed. Observation and other activities were sharply stepped up to counter this trend. 3. An even greater increase in activity was made with the premature discovery of nuclear fission, which represents a very great menace to all entities on all planes, and flying saucers began to be seen much more frequently than before. The results of the present uncontrolled heavy metals atomic explosions, while very annoying, are not particularly dangerous except from the standpoint of atmospheric contamination. It is possible, however, to employ methods which will react with certain constituents of this planet, and thus cause its destruction. The present band of asteroids between Mars and Jupiter are the remains of a former planet which was destroyed by this means. The result was catastrophic on all planets and planes. This particular formula has not yet been discovered on your planet, and it has been determined that it shall not be developed. 4. Contrary to the dire warnings of certain cults and certain astral dwellers, however, there is no desire or intention of destroying your planet. Neither is there any wish or intent to depopulate it. Not only is killing forbidden by laws, but also it is fully recognized that the discarnation of an undesirable entity affords only temporary relief at best, and may ultimately aggravate the problem. Once they have been reoriented on another plane, they have even greater powers than before and hence, greater power for harm. Any individual discarnations of your people will be only as a last desperate temporary resort, after all other means have failed. Remember always that our aim is to aid you, not to harm you. 5. The present situation might well be analogized by saying that, when a child reaches a certain age, it must be taught to employ such useful aids as fire and sharp-edged tools. It must be watched, however, and perhaps at times even forcibly restrained, to prevent it, in its ignorance, from cutting its own throat or burning the house down. At the moment, the child has just discovered some things far beyond its ability to understand or safely use. The situation is further complicated by the fact that some of its more demonic playmates are urging it to use its newfound knowledge in particularly dangerous ways. These consist both of entities on the lower astral, and persons of low intelligence who inhabit the cavern homes of the ancient elder races, and have use of electronic apparatus which was abandoned there. 6. It is clearly recognized that the only safe solution for all concerned, is education, which will raise the mass intelligence and ethical level of the Adamic races. Restraints cannot be permanently effective, for some will eventually evade them. Taboos against the use of the things which have been prematurely learned are worse than useless. Previous experience indicates that, due to some psychological perversity of the Adamic races, this tends merely to glamorize the forbidden thing, and make them more determined than ever to do it. Even temporary restraints can be employed only with great discretion. One learns primarily by their own experience and error. These educational errors must be permitted, and restraints should be used only when they threaten to become major tragedies. 7. In the final analysis, no one can teach another. One can merely place information before another, in proper sequence and in accord with the student's mental capacity and understanding, and then, by various psychological stratagems, attempt to secure its acceptance as fact. Fear is a powerful stimulus, and frequently used to channel thought into some desired field. It too must be used with very great discretion. If a fear is permitted to become too widespread, or too intense, then the fearful ones may, by the unconscious use of the laws of thought, create the very thing which they fear. Some news suppressions have been the result of stupidity and, or lack of understanding on the part of your scientists and public officials. Others have been directed in order to reduce some fear which was getting out of control. 8. The task of your guardian races is threefold. First and foremost is to accelerate the spiritual awakening, and the resulting ethical and moral development of the Adamic races. Second is to closely watch their scientific progress, aiding that which is beneficial, retarding that which is detrimental, and temporarily halting that which is disastrous. Third is to watch the evil influences, which may prompt some to take harmful actions. Interference with these influences will come only if they threaten to cause very great harm. The Adamic races must learn to recognize and resist these influences on their own behalf. To this end, they must be permitted to make errors in judgment in these matters, and to suffer the natural consequences thereof, that they may learn by their own unpleasant experiences. 9. These three different tasks are being handled by three different groups, each of which ordinarily restrict their activities to their own particular task. They work in close harmony and cooperation, however, and will promptly aid one another if the need arises. Each also receives valuable aid from many different groups and individuals on many different planes, including some of the more advanced thinkers of your own plane. These latter, either knowingly or unknowingly, often are of great assistance as the eyes and hands of those from other planes who cannot work directly on this one. 10. Since the ethical and moral phases of the task involve the use of the mental sciences, they are directed by those who are the recognized masters of these sciences, namely, the Etherikotlans and Lemurians. Both of these formerly dwelt on the material plane of your planet, and are now on the etheric counterpart of your planet. On rare occasions they may use some form of mechanical transport, but usually function by non-mechanical means. Most of the flying saucers seen by you belong to others. 11. The scientific phases are in the hands of the etheric Gnors, specifically a sub-branch known as the Vikners. They are the recognized masters of the physical sciences, and for many ages past it has been the custom of the other races to call upon them for aid in scientific matters. One group of them also formerly inhabited the material plane of your planet, but for a much shorter period of time than the other two races. They are now on Mars and Venus Etheria, with the greater part of those who are engaged in the present operations calling from the latter place. Most of the flying saucers are operated by them. Mars and Venus Etheria is interpreted as the etheric plane or level of these planets. 12. The third phase, that of coping with the evil influences, is handled by a mixed group. Actual direction is in the hands of the Lemurians, with the Gnors functioning when anything of a mechanical nature is involved. Much work is also done by the more advanced groups in the caverns, and by groups on the various astral planes. 13. Effective observation and action on any plane can be accomplished only on that plane. Thus the flying saucers of the Venusian Gnors must be capable of both inter-planetary and interplane travel. They must be brought here from Venus, and converted to the vibrational level of this plane. Any of the various types of craft which you have seen, could be transported here individually, if desired. Any of them could also be converted to your vibrational frequency individually, either by the use of their own mechanism, or by external influences. As a matter of operational convenience, However, they are usually brought here in large numbers on a carrier craft. These carriers, by the use of their own mechanism, can teleport themselves to this planet, and simultaneously convert to the desired vibrational level. They remain high above the surface of your planet, in order to prevent detection, and act as a base and coordinating center for their smaller flyers. 14. In the teleportation method of transportation, the craft and everything on it are converted into pure energy, which is reconverted into its original form at the desired point an almost immeasurable instant later. The control is very delicate, and it is very difficult to exactly place the craft when working from a mobile control. Due to very slight errors, several carriers have been reconverted quite close to the surface of your planet, and it is believed that at least one of these was observed from the surface. To avoid such incidents in the future, the reconversion point is now a considerable distance from your planet, and the carrier then comes into the desired altitude by what you would term normal space flight. 15. There are several types of carriers, but the only one so far used in the present operations is known as the Voku class. It is about 7,000 feet long, and about 1,000 feet in diameter. This is more than 2,300 meters long, and 170 meters in diameter. It normally carries a crew of about 2,500, including the technicians and the pilots of the smaller flyers. They can use several different types of propulsion, according to circumstances. They are heavily armed. 16. The smaller flyers use several different types of propulsion. A form of jet propulsion, although very ancient, is still extensively used, a very small disarray, playing upon a stream of fuel in a closed chamber, atomically disintegrates it. The usual fuel is air, which is collected in scoops by the forward motion of the craft, and automatically compressed to injection pressure. Other fuels, including metals, can be used in airless locations. The end products of the process are radio active, and can be detected by means of usual test apparatus. Since none of the heavy metals group is ever used for fuel, however, the radioactivity is very short-lived, and does not cause any permanent atmospheric contamination. 17. Electromagnetic drive operates by cutting the natural magnetic lines of force produced by a planetary body, and can be used only relatively near the surface of some planet. When used at low altitudes, it has the effect of blanking out radio apparatus, and causing variations in magnetic compasses and other magnetic apparatus in the vicinity. 18. Primary drive is a true space drive and, although it can be used on a planet, it is ordinarily used only when it is desired to travel at a very high rate of speed for a long distance. Control mechanism on the craft is placed in synchronous frequency with the universal energy flows, which exist in all space, but slightly out of phase with them. Either lagging or leading phase can be used, depending upon whether it is desired to travel with the flows, or against them. The speed depends on the degree of phase angle which, in turn, depends on the amount of shading power which the control apparatus can apply. The maximum potential speed is never realized, since practical navigation and control problems usually limit the top usable speed to about 27,000 miles per hour, 44,000 kilometers per hour. A few exceptionally skilled pilots have exceeded this. 19. In addition to the three types of propulsion listed, all craft have means of hovering motionless when desired. One piece of apparatus produces a cone shaped electrical field which diverts the flow of gravity around the craft, much as an umbrella diverts rain, thus cancelling most of the weight. Another produces a downward electron beam jet which compensates for the slight remaining weight. It is quite common to use the diversion field while in flight, in order to reduce the effective mass of the craft, thus making it more maneuverable and reducing the amount of power required to maintain flight. This field will, under certain conditions, produce a corona discharge which will give the craft the appearance of being surrounded by a luminous or fiery envelope. A similar corona effect is also quite common on craft using the electromagnetic form of propulsion. 20. The Vikners have, to date, used 7 different types of flyers. 1. Sousa class.